beautiful people, we have to do a Happy New Year, first show of 2025. It's Olga Peters on the Montpelier Happy Hour. You're listening to WBEW LP Brattleboro. And of course, it is me and the lovely representative Emily Kornheiser from Brattleboro. Happy 2025, Emily.
Happy 2025, Olga.
We have no idea what the year holds for us, so we might as well start with a party, right?
Absolutely.
Well, on that note, this is Friday. We are recording this the morning of Friday the 3rd of January. And the next time we meet, which hopefully will be the first Friday after the session, if you're free, and you haven't totally gone down into the world of legislative life, the session will have opened, which it opens on the 8th, I believe.
Yes, on Wednesday.
On Wednesday. So less than a week away for you. Mm-hmm. And yeah, we every hit the ground running, off we go. And I think for you, it's going to be property tax parties all day long.
Yes, yes. So session starts on Wednesday. Committee work doesn't really begin until the following week because there's a lot of swearing in and pomp and circumstance that happen in the first week. But I have been meeting with legislative staff and getting the agenda for the committee ready. And we are going to be working on property taxes and pretty much nothing but property taxes in the Ways and Means Committee. There are, you know, priorities for the session feel pretty clear in the House, and our work is going to be front and center. And I'm really feeling pretty hopeful about what it will look like for us to put together the pieces of this puzzle in order to create an education system that is fair and that our kids can get their needs met and that folks can pay their bills.
Looking forward to it. Now, just for clarity's sake, technically, the committee assignments haven't been handed out yet.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you for that. So that's helpful for folks to know. So
new bunny just went running across the yard.
The bunny. The bunny's going across the yard.
The bunny's going across the yard.
I think that means something for the new year. A bunny.
I think it does. And yeah. I didn't see anything chasing it. So, you know, that's good news.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, I cut you off. We were, just for the sake of listeners, Emily and I before the show were talking about having bunnies in the yard and how that makes us happy. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And Focus all the listeners who are gardeners are like, what's wrong with the two of them? But not really very skilled gardener. So I just like looking at bunnies. I also like eating the bunnies. So just going to really try to offend everyone in this little snippet of the show.
It's the cycle of life, you know?
Yes, absolutely. So anyway, legislative session starts, new biennium starts. We are sworn in by the Secretary of State. And then from there, we elect a speaker. And then the speaker makes committee assignments. There are two candidates for speaker. New candidates for speaker have both, all candidates for speaker have to actually declare themselves with the Secretary of State's office. So unlike some other sort of legislative procedures, there are no surprises there. And both candidates for speaker have told me that I would be their choice for chair of the Ways and Means Committee, okay. For better or for worse. And so I feel like so that's what's going to happen. This is a time of a lot of stress related to our property taxes and a lot of change related to our property taxes and a lot of attention on that. And it is not a time for, entirely upsetting the apple cart on who's trying to figure this stuff out. And yeah. So I am looking forward to working really closely with my colleague, Peter Conlin, who is the chair of the House Education Committee, and figuring out what we're going to be doing next.
Just a side note for folks, in the show notes, I'm going to put a link to the Public Assets Institute. They've done a couple videos on places where they feel there can be some property tax relief and some restructuring of the education funding system. For those who don't know, Public Assets Institute, they're, I guess, probably a, what would you call, public policy analysis think tank kind of organization in Montpelier. But the reason I'm linking into the show notes is not so much whether folks should agree or disagree with their three-part plan for property taxes. It's more that Stephanie Yu, the executive director, does a really good history on ed taxes and sort of how we got here and how our system breaks down. And so, folks who are maybe still looking for some information on that, I think she has some good background on our property tax system that could help illuminate things for folks. And for you, Emily, you know, you've been working for years now on the Ways and Means Committee. You've been all taxes all the time. What was your belief or your thoughts about what taxes should do and how they should operate when you started this work, and have those thoughts changed? You know, have your goals around taxes changed? Have your philosophy around taxes changed? You know, ultimately, I guess, what are you hoping to achieve with your work this session?
Thanks, Olga. So when I first ran for office, this is going to be my 7th year that we're starting, and so my 4th biennium. And we've been doing the show all that time, so definitely, like, opportunities to trace the evolution of the thinking in the deep archives of the show.
The Wayback
But
Machine.
when I look back, my first committee request and my first committee assignment was on the Commerce Committee. And I was interested in that because I wanted to make sure that our economy was robust enough to meet the needs of the folks who live here. And some of that is wages, yes. And we've talked about that extensively on the show. But it's also that the economy is robust enough to raise sufficient revenue to meet the needs of the state. Because we are a small state, and that makes some things more expensive sometimes, and it makes some things less expensive sometimes. But I believe very strongly that here in civilization, which is what we're in for better or for worse, we look to government as sort of the organizing body of our collaboration. So things that are better done together than separate, which, I think healthcare is part of that. I think, sort of caring for us when we are sick or vulnerable, young, childcare, education, roads, infrastructure, all of those things I think we agree are better done together. And government's job is to do those. And if we do it well, we all benefit. And when we do it badly, which I think in many cases we are right now, it costs all of us more. And so I really think of a sufficiently funded government as an opportunity both for our lives to improve and for our costs to go down. When we pool our resources, things can happen both more effectively and more efficiently. And so that is why I was sort of focused on commerce and then moved my focus to the Ways and Means Committee and to tax policy. I think the greatest problem of our time is income inequality. And I think that's a problem because it means that there's such a wide range of the quality of life that Vermonters have and how hard their lives are. And I think government can do a lot to fix that. And that very much includes the middle class. I think one of the reasons that property taxes are so incredibly challenging right now for folks is that we have done a lot of work in Vermont to create very progressive tax policy compared to many other states. Still like nothing on the international scale, but still very sort of we've done a good job in relation to sort of some other states. But in doing that, we've sort of reduced a lot of the pressure of taxes and made taxes a lot more fair for folks who are really like at the very bottom of the economic scale reality. And that's huge, and that's really important, and that's sort of a key tenet of good tax policy. But in doing that, we have, in some cases, made taxes really unfair for middle class folks. And property taxes are where the biggest part of that squeeze happens. And so the work this year is to really see like, what can we do to make property taxes more fair for all Vermonters, and particularly middle class Vermonters, who are often at the edge of sort of a lot of cliffs and cash flow problems and benefits and all of that. And so really want to make Vermont does have one of the very best education systems in the country. I think Vermonters believe really strongly in education. And so we want to continue to support that really top quality education for our kids, make sure it's adapted to the future, but do it in a way that is fair for all of us who need to pay our bills.
And what other, just to help highlight that, when you work with your committee members or when you are crafting policy on your committee and taking testimony from folks, what are you hearing? I mean, okay, how do I guess what I'm trying to get at is, thank you for laying out your thoughts on taxes. I'm wondering if there are other philosophies or beliefs around taxes that, as you're doing your work, you're coming up against. To just, I'm trying to get my finger on like what other stories or what are other beliefs are out there that might be influencing policy or people's response to policy. I think that's what I'm trying to get at.
So one big piece that I think is particularly important in the case of property taxes and education, you know, the education taxes, is this balance between simplicity and equity. And a fair tax system is not necessarily a simple tax system. That doesn't mean it's not understandable. It just means that, you know, there's a little extra math involved in order to make it fair. Because we all have very different circumstances that we're living in, and we want to make sure that we have a tax system that's not, you know, leaving people out, right? And the economy of Burlington and the property values in Burlington are very different than the economy and the property values in Pownal. And when we're creating a statewide tax system, we want to make sure that both, you know, folks in both of those areas are treated fairly. And so that's going to necessitate some complication. Because we receive our property taxes often in the mail, and like have this piece of paper that tells us how much is due, rather than with, say, our income taxes, where one, it's like withheld for us, and two, we sort of puzzle our way towards finding out what our eventual responsibility is. People have a very different relationship to sort of the complication of their income taxes than they do to the complication of their property taxes.
Interesting. Good
And
point.
so that's a big piece, this sort of like push to simplify. And so there's like a lot that I'm hoping we can do this year to make it clearer to colleagues, to Vermonters, sort of where the value is in sometimes things, you know, having a little extra math, and what it will take for folks to feel, you know, sort of comfortable with the bills they need to pay, right? So that's one story, I think is a really interesting one. And then the other huge piece in our education system in Vermont in particular is this balance between sort of the statewide constitutional mandate regarding an equitable education And the deep need and desire in Vermont for strong local communities. And I think sometimes people think that those two things are in opposition to each other. And I believe that they can very much exist together. But in order for them to work together, in order for us to have a fair education system, a fair tax policy where Vermonters can pay their bills, and strong local communities, we're going to need to like all come together at the table to make that happen. And that takes like some really strong facilitation. And so this year in the legislature, I've really been thinking a lot about how I want to be doing my work personally. And I'm not interested in being sort of the hero or the villain or the. I'll just stop there, the hero, the villain. I want to be the facilitator. And like, that's where my professional background lies. That's where my skills lie. That's one of the reasons I wanted to go into this work. And so my job is to make sure that like all the right people are sitting at the table, all puzzling through these tensions together to find a path forward.
What, how much power can does tax policy have to, relieve some of the burden on taxpayers, given some of the economic issues we've talked about in this state? You and I have talked about wages not being high enough. I think, was it this week or last week, the governor talked about, I think he was interviewed by Vermont Public, and he talked about, we need more people. We don't have enough people here. That's the demographic issues he's talked about for several years now. Given some of those limitations in our economy, how much can tax policy really change?
I'm going to do a little aside because this
Go for
is
it.
a thing that I am perpetual that I'm very confused about this year. The governor has been in office for a long time now. And when he first ran for office, he kept on talking about these like three top line numbers all the time. And I don't remember what the numbers
I
were. And
don't
I
either.
don't even remember what they were about. But he used them all the time. And it's really just recently he stopped constantly using these numbers. It was like his catchphrase. And the whole idea was that like one of the big things was that he wanted to grow the number of people in Vermont. That was like one of the numbers. That was one of his top goals. We have like one of the fastest growing populations in the country, percentage wise. And I don't understand why he is not taking credit for it. I don't think he deserves credit for it, to be clear. Like, I think it's like a product of the pandemic and like actually the amazing culture that we have here and like a whole bunch of other stuff. I think it's actually a lot of it is about like some of the really progressive policy that we've passed that make people all over the country feel like they'd be safe here. But like he had three goals and he's achieved one of them. And why is he not like taking a victory lap on it? It's so weird.
If I
And part of it is
remember,
like we have a housing crisis. And so like celebrating having more people here is a little complicated. But anyway. I don't know if you have thoughts on that. I just like, here's my outlet to rant and can be confused. And so I'm doing it in this moment. And then we can go back to talking about taxes.
I think what I just add to that, if I'm remembering the interview correctly, and I'm pretty sure this came from the governor, if I'm misremembering that, my apologies to everyone who's listening, is part of what he had a caveat of, sure, people have moved here, but they tend to be on the older end of the spectrum. They're bringing their money with them. They've retired. But we've lost the families and the middle class.
It's
And
like not even true though. Like if you
okay.
like,
I haven't looked at our demographic numbers lately,
yeah.
so I'm not the best person to weigh in on that
So
part,
like the
but.
whole thing, it's just totally wild. Like, take credit, buddy. You like the thing happened that you wanted. I mean, I wanted it too. Like, it's great. We need more people here. Anyway, so back to the taxes. So there's a really great Ezra Klein interview in like no October maybe. And I think we've talked about it a little bit. Like there are the biggest pressures on people's budgets that really cause people to feel like the economy isn't working for them, even as wages are going up, right? And inflation is slowing, are health insurance, education costs, sort of like pressures on like and housing costs, right? And those huge bills that are growing way faster and f are feel totally out of control for most of us, there is a tremendous capacity within tax policy to do something about those. Some of that, what? So some
Such
of that
as
is just like, structuring tax rebates to lower those costs. But more, it's about like there's tremendous power in government to solve those problems, to expand affordable housing across like multiple income levels, right? To create more housing stock, to create the environment where housing stock is more possible, to create a healthcare system that, actually meets the needs of folks, like every other country in the world has done, right? Like that kind of stuff. So there's like tremendous power in tax policy to do those things. Us doing them at the Vermont level doesn't always work, right? And we saw that with the failures of single payer. We've seen a lot of progress on affordable housing in Vermont. It is like clearly nowhere near enough, all of those things. So there's sort of like that piece of where tax policy can make a difference. I think what's hard is that like in the face of all of those pressures and what feels like a lack of control, people see a big bill on from their taxes and feel like that's the place where government is messing with their household budgets, right? Even if it's not the biggest bill every month, even if it's like the 10th biggest bill every month, it's a place where people can like sort of see that government's interfering in their lives in a way that they don't feel comfortable with, rather than seeing, the fact that like when there are potholes in the roads, it costs more to replace your tires, right? And like that unexpected expense of like tires is the worst. Like it's the worst, right? And like tires are so expensive now. Right? And so that, or heating costs, right? Like there's a lot of government value that can be brought from like helping us insulate our homes and regulating utilities and all of those things. And like the unexpected costs when like heating fuel jumps is a lot. So that's sort of where those are places that tax policy can sort of make a difference in people's individual lives in a lot of directions. And then writ large, income inequality is a problem. Not just financially, it erodes trust in a community. It erodes how people show up in a community. And so tax policy at its most basic can be used to sort of interfere in massive income inequality and has historically sort of since, for centuries,
Just
sometimes better and sometimes worse. So when
to
we look
make it.
back at the 50s, which we often think of, racial and gender dynamics aside, folks look at it sort of like, the golden age in America. We had some of our highest taxes on high income folks and our highest taxes on corporations in the history of the country then.
You talked about income inequality, which a lot of data suggests is increasing in Vermont. When you talk about tax policy kind of counteracting that, can you just give us some examples just to make it a little more tangible?
Yeah, so like at the very most basic, a progressive income tax policy where, sort of the wealthier you are, the higher your income taxes are, can lower taxes for folks who make less money, for middle class folks, so that they have more money in their pockets and they're spending that money, right? It's circulating in the economy that makes our small town stronger, because folks with less disposable income spend more money in sort of a disposable economy, right? So, middle class folks, poor folks spend almost all of their money every month. And that money circulates and gets to all of us, right? Folks with tremendous wealth, unless they're paying taxes on it, that wealth tends to sit and not create more community wealth in the same way. So that's just one example.
Thank you. We're getting close to the end of this first half. Are there any policies or new legislation around taxes that you're anticipating submitting or that will go up on the wall or anything left over? No, the last biennium, things have to start over again. Sorry.
So, other than I have a sort of a whole package of property tax changes that likely we're going to be looking at that we could talk about maybe in the second half. But the only other sort of piece of big tax policy that's unrelated to education and unrelated to property taxes is that likely the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, the federal one, is going to expire. And so that has some implications for how we link up with federal taxes. So our Vermont state tax code has places where it's aligned with the federal tax code. And we sort of reaffirm that every single year. And so there will be some decisions that we'll need to make in the context of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act expiring.
Interesting. Well, stay tuned, folks. Emily and I will be right back after the break. We're going to hear from some underwriters here on WVEW LP Brattleboro. So don't go anywhere. Welcome back to the second half of the Montpelier Happy Hour here on WVEW LP Brattleboro. I'm your host, Olga Peters, and I'm speaking with Representative Emily Kornheiser, who is the regular contributor for this show. She's down in Brattleboro getting ready to head up to Montpelier next week. And we've been talking about tax policy because, one, it's Emily's bailiwick, and two, it is a massive discussion in Vermont, not just now, but it kind of seems perennial in Vermont, the conversation around taxes. So, quickly, I want to thank BCTV for taking the video version of the show, sharing it with media centers around the state. Emily, what should we remind listeners of?
The views and opinions expressed here on the Montpelier Happy Hour are those of the host and the guests, respectively, and not the radio station.
Perfect. Or the platforms or
Well,
any.
you know what, Olga? Actually, I just read that, all the net neutrality legislation, which has been sort of like actively in courts for quite a while now, has been like pretty close to a final decision, and it looks like corporate internet has won. And so platforms have no liability whatsoever and won't. Not I sort of purposely skipped that one today because in honor of the court decision that it's not necessarily how I would want it decided, but I am not an attorney, so I'm sure that I'm missing massive pieces of the
Yeah,
conversation.
it goes again under the category of, well, no one asked us. Well, thank you for that update, Emily, on net neutrality. So if you're watching the show on one of the many platforms, I guess you've been warned.
I mean, the essential question is like, can our internet providers utility providers, and can they be re regulated as utilities? And the answer from the court seems to be no.
Which is interesting.
Yeah, it's certainly counterintuitive.
Well, it is, because I think where my brain is going, rightly or wrongly, is no, actually, we won't go down that
For another day. Show for another time.
Exactly. So I want to talk about your package of tax policies that you're looking at, Emily, but before we do, I wanted to touch base on just something for a little bit of fun. As I've been getting ready for the new year, I've been revisiting our initial concept and intention for starting this show, which was to really look at the stories we tell ourselves as a community and how that might influence policy. And I think taxes is like ripe for that. But it made me kind of think about like the stories we tell ourselves and what becomes a dirty word when we're talking about things. So for example, when I'm out and about doing my work for Vermont Business Magazine, I so often hear from businesses, well, you know, Vermont's anti-business. So it's like business is a dirty word. Or I think some people think middle class is a dirty word. Taxes are a dirty word. So I'm curious for you, it doesn't even have to be related to tax policy. What do you think are some of the dirty words that we might be dealing with in 2025 for legislature?
Well, I am sort of compulsively try not to use the word tax liability. Instead, I talk about tax obligations or tax responsibilities. I think local control is sort of an interesting dirty word, trigger word, a word with feelings. I think this idea that Vermont, I think the idea that everyone thinks of themselves as middle class is really fascinating. I don't think middle class is a dirty word. I think working class is a dirty word.
Say more about that, please.
I think that everyone wants to think of themselves as middle class, and no one wants everyone wants to sort of feel like they're like everyone else. And I think that makes it hard for us to see sort of how the system is working for us or not, and or not working for us in a more objective way if we can't sort of place ourselves within that system. I remember, I don't know, like my third year in the legislature or something. Seeing this really amazing chart that Joyce Manchester, who recently retired from JFO, made, that I will not be able to find for the show notes, so I'm so sorry, listeners. That was really focused on like the benefits trough, we called it, related to childcare costs, but had a bunch of other pieces layered into it. And I realized that sort of my personal experience of being like really quite significantly low income, and sort of like when my child was born and a toddler, and then sort of like steadily making a little bit more money each year, until I got to probably like, I think at the time that I was looking at that chart, I was probably at like the median or average income in Vermont, which used to be closer together than they are now. And I had like almost the same felt experience of my budget across like what was a growth of maybe like $40,000 a year in not that long a time span, because I had been sort of like slowly losing benefits throughout that and not gotten to a place where I actually had any more money in my pocket over like that huge span of income growth. And until I saw that chart, I felt like it was my fault. And so I think there's something that's really interesting that happens when we sort of stop, When we take a step back from the dirty words and like actually figure out where we might fit in a system. So those are dirty words, I think. I think wealth is a dirty word. I think no one wants to be described as wealthy, because I think people think that like all kinds of bad stuff comes with it. Which I think is different in Vermont than in a lot of other places. So that's interesting.
Well, especially interesting for a state that actually has some pockets of wealth. Kind of hidden, not hidden, but around all over the place at the end of dirt roads and at the end of long driveways. And
I think there's something really interesting in Vermont this year and always about like politics as a dirty word. And so, the governor says like they want to play politics and I want to collaborate. And like, frankly, my experience is that like he wants to play politics and I want to collaborate, right? And so, like, what does it take to actually just all put aside politics and talk about the good of the state together, right? Are people willing to do that, like to sort of subsume their own egos in order to just like get the job done? I think interest groups is a dirty word. Or lobbyists. Yeah,
When
what do
you
you,
say
what else?
interest groups, are you talking super PACs? Are you talking advocacy groups like,
I think people think of super PACs, and I
okay.
think we're mostly talking about advocacy groups.
Gotcha. Interesting.
What about you? Do you have any dirty word ideas?
Well, definitely, like I said, when I'm been interviewing people across the state, it often feels like anything to do it folks feel that anything to do with business or having like a thriving economy is considered a dirty word in Vermont from these folks' point of view. But I would also say I think for a lot of people, words like regulations, taxes, the workings of government are often dirty words.
I've been
And
thinking about that one a lot lately, and how, like, the in doing that, in making those dirty words, we are not able or willing to improve those things so that people can actually trust them and they can work. It's like a very self-perpetuating cycle.
well, and it's an interesting cycle too, especially in a small town like a small state like Vermont, where we have actually a lot of input into our government. And so I think sometimes we forget that the government is ours, and it is how we, for better or for worse, self-organize and try to get needs met at a community and state level. And I'm not saying it's always done right or done fair or things like that, but it is, it's funny. I think we give away a lot of our control when we're like, oh, folks in Montpelier, they're all stupid. They don't know what they're doing. When we forget, like, this is our government and how do we want it to work? And I also realize I say that in a world where a lot of people don't have the bandwidth to engage with their government. As an example, I had a little reminder about the Vermont economy. Yesterday, my plow guy stopped by, and he's doing one flat fee for the winter, basically. And so I was paying him half the fee, and I'll pay them the rest at the end of the season. But we were talking, and he says, well, I'm retired now. And I kind of looked at his truck and I looked at him, and he said, well, I'm Vermont retired, meaning I only have like one job now. And that's just been sitting with me about like, how we perceive our economy and how so many people are like making it work or
I was
not.
just talking to a good friend this weekend about who like works with his body, works in the trades and like what his like planning for his retirement job, like which we're hoping will be at a library, right? Like, yeah, planning for the retirement job. Vermont economy.
I'm doing that already too. Yeah, it's like, what's my retirement job gonna be?
I think there's also some sort of dirty word around older Vermonters.
Definitely, yes. I fully agree with that.
And, whether that's about their housing or their relationship to property taxes or education taxes or whatever that is, I think there's something there too.
And healthcare. I'd say healthcare too. Definitely. I don't think I have any other dirty words right now, but I think we should clock this over the session and just see if we come up with any others.
So fun. I love this game.
It's a fun game, right? How do we make democracy fun? Let's look for the dirty words. So let's pivot to your package of property taxes that you're thinking about.
So to be clear, like this isn't my package.
Okay.
I have no package. I am working on like I'm working on one like fairly small bill that is the Office of the Taxpayer Advocate that folks might not know existed, but
No.
it's one person
Well,
and
lucky them.
he got a lot more action this year than he has for a couple of years. And so, given that so many more of my colleagues have engaged with his office, I thought it was a good time to just sort of like refresh his charge,
Okay.
a little bit more time on it and see if it was working for his office and if it was working for folks who are accessing the Office of the Healthcare, the Office of the Taxpayer Advocate. So that's like the one piece of legislation that like I have ready to go. That's
Okay.
like, something that I am just sort of like clearly taking the lead on. The other work that we're going to be doing on education costs and property taxes is going to be really, it's an all hands on deck, all committee puzzle. And so there is a piece of the work that's going to be done by every committee in the House, really starting like, in the second week of the session, likely. And that feels exciting, when we talk about sort of everyone coming around the table to work on this puzzle. It's nice to know that so many people will like, are going to be brought into it. And so there are big pieces of that that are about how we teach our kids, how our schools are organized, how our communities are kept strong. That is done by the education committee. And there are big pieces of that that are tax policy. Some of that is about property value appraisals and how we appraise properties and how different kinds of different classifications of properties might pay taxes differently. So that is, low income folks or folks with really high value properties or current use, pieces like that. In Hawaii, they have like six different categories of property taxes, depending on the, resorts pay one rate, second homes pay another rate, homes pay another rate. So we have a report from the Department of Taxes about all of that that we're going to be looking at and developing legislation from. And then how schools get the money they need to teach kids. And that's going to be sort of the other big project that we're working on. We're going to be doing all of that work, both on the Education Committee and on the Ways and Means Committee, really led by the work that the Commission on the Future of Public Education did.
Okay.
So we have a list that was a brainstorm that happened in that in those committee rooms in the commission's work that we're going to be working from. And they issued an interim report on the 15th. It's very much an interim report. It was supposed to be an interim report. It doesn't have findings. It's not like proposals. It's a here are some of the dynamics that we have seen so far, and we're going to be working from those dynamics to take our next steps. And so that's how we're drafting the agenda and how we're working through it.
Okay, wow.
And then the commission is charged with doing like pretty comprehensive community conversations. And then we're going to be supplementing that with really asking like every legislator, every House member to be having those conversations in their communities about the dirty words, about, what it means to have a strong community, what it means to have kids that are being supported to learn, and teachers to teach.
I will, we've talked about the Commission on the Future of Education and before, but I will link to its page in the show notes again in case anyone wants to revisit the work the commission's doing. And if I remember correctly, the commission's timeline can it I mean it's a multi-year process. It's not it like didn't wrap up in December. It's going to keep going into what, 2026?
Yes.
Okay.
They
And
have a lot of charges related to like how the Agency of Education does its work, the role of the Board of Education, like a lot of stuff that's sort of separate from what we're talking about here.
yeah, it gets deep into the functioning of education, even in Vermont. Any other policies you wanted to mention?
The other big issues that I think legislative colleagues will be focused on are responding and preparing for the Trump administration, right? We did a huge amount of that work 4 years ago. And when we sort of have conversations with advocates, look at sort of the national landscape about what other states are planning to do to prepare, a lot of that is work we finished already. A lot of our protections for healthcare workers, around privacy, a lot of that has been finished. And so a lot we're going to be, but that is a major focus. And then
And before you go on, if I remember correctly, one reason it's a major focus is just looking at the places where the state and the federal governments interact. And where we might get funding from the federal government, what do we do in case that funding goes away or changes parameters?
Frankly, what to do if that funding goes away is like that is too big a problem to solve. Like if the funding goes away, we're all like a wee bit doomed.
Okay.
And so I think it's more like what do we do if the policies change? Or what
Okay.
can we do if the policies are weaponized against Vermonters, right? That we have some leverage with. And so that's, that will be the work of every committee. Housing still a big focus, but with divided government, it's going to be harder to solve it. We did a lot of regulatory reform, and we're going to see how that plays out. And then healthcare is similar to actually a lot of the other work that's going to need to happen this biennium, is really about making sure that state government is carrying out its charge. So we put legislation into action to really make sure we are moving ahead with a specific model for how we collaborate with the feds and we use our Medicaid dollars. There's a lot of work being done to strengthen our hospital system by the Agency of Human Services. It's really going to be the work of sort of like monitoring and supporting state government that the healthcare committee is going to do this year. And similarly, we've spent all of this ARPA money, there's still ARPA money that needs to be spent. What is it going to look like to keep the focus on that, keep the focus on making sure that sort of government's just doing its job of meeting people's needs, all of our needs.
Fantastic. Thank you. Oh, I just had a
And
question
by
and
all of
it.
our needs, I don't mean every single need we each have. I mean the needs of all of us,
Yes. Yeah,
regardless of.
that's a good distinction to make. you know, It's been, I think the last time we talked, we had a little check-in of, things felt hard, and a lot of things will be hard going forward into 2025. And I guess for you, what are you still looking forward to as you enter this legislative session? Because, you ran to do the work again. So you volunteered for that, for better or worse. So despite the hardness, what are you still looking forward to?
I was remembering why I ran for office in the first place. And a lot of that was, and like, this is not the politician's answer, so maybe I shouldn't say on the radio. I really wanted to work with like the super smart people that work in Montpelier,
There are some
and
super
like
smart people in
learn
Montpelier.
from them,
Yeah.
right? And so I'm excited to do that again. I love a puzzle. And so I ran for office again because I knew that we had a lot facing us. And this state is an amazing state where we really care about each other, right? And so I knew that I was well positioned to be one of the people like sitting around the table, putting the puzzle pieces in place in order to keep our community strong, because this is a state that wants that, right? That will fight for that. And so I'm looking forward to that. It's a really tremendous honor to do this work, as hard as it is. And once I, during the off session, when I'm like driving to Montpelier and back in a single day for a single meeting, or I'm just like sitting here at my laptop all day trying to like work my paid job and answer constituent stuff and like do all the things all at once, it's sometimes it's hard to remember that. But when I actually like walk into the state house, or walk up to the state house even, and like see the dome glowing, and feel the history of all the folks that have done this before me, I hold that honor very dearly, and that is something I'm looking forward to again. We have our monthly constituent coffee hour this Saturday. Tomorrow morning. And that also, I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to sort of like putting on my facilitator hat and asking my neighbors, like, what should we do about this thing? What do you want for our community?
Thank you, Emily. I know for me, I am looking forward to it sounds geeky. Well, it is geeky. Just more conversations. I am constantly fascinated by how things work and how puzzles fit together and how people perceive, the problems around them, the community around them, what they find important, what inspires them. So I'm looking forward to more conversations in 2025 where I feel very honored that I get to be curious. And hear people's perspectives on things. I always feel that is, as a journalist, when people will share their experiences with me or their thoughts on things, that's always feels like an honor to me, to be able to sit and witness and hear people's experiences. So I am looking forward to that. We should probably let listeners know that unfortunately, with your legislative work, you may have to just pop in sporadically throughout the session, but of course, every time you do, we will enjoy hearing what's happening in Montpelier.
Thank you, Olga. I cannot sustain the weekly radio show during the session, and I'm looking forward to joining whenever I can. And I'm excited that listeners get to hear a lot more voices other than mine in the coming few months, and so that will be wonderful as well.
On that note, Emily, if people want to reach out to you or follow your work, how can they do that?
Folks can go to emilykornheiser.org, and they will find links to all the different ways to get in touch with me.
And as always, the Montpelier Happy Hour is on WVEW LP Brattleboro every Friday at 2, rebroadcasted on Wednesday morning, and wherever you subscribe to your podcasts, as well as VCTV. So take care, everyone, and happy 2025.
Happy New Year.